Welcome to the Walking Through Time podcasts. There are plenty more to make your visit to New Norfolk more enjoyable.
Well, the Terry family was the first to come here. They came here, I think, 1818, I think it was, and they started, they saw the possibilities for this race to drive their water mill, and apparently that was what they wanted. They didn't want a windmill, they wanted a water mill kind of thing. And I said they were granted the 2,000 acres, and they dug this channel down there to drive their mill. And then over the period, I think it was 1822, they started to grind. You know, they were ready then by 1822. Then, as far as I know, the Terry family was here then until the Moore family came. I don't know when that'd be, about the 1860s or 1870s, I reckon, because they planted the hops, and of course they added the tower and everything to the tin-walled house.
The house was further along
the original house.
Place, was about 500 metres further.
Yeah, it was just a little hut, wasn't it?
I remember
the people living up there. And then the Moors put it in hops. I know later on, when I was a young man and we served the Moore family, and they were then fairly well off, you know, they died out, but I remember old Mrs. Moore, and she'd come in the shop and she used to be given, you know, royalty treatment kind of thing, because, you know, she was probably the richest woman in the place kind of thing. And then, as far as I know, then the Plunkett family took over. I think that was round about the First World War or something, somewhere about there. And there were two families of them, there were Alan and Vic, and there were kids in both families. I remember that we all went to the school and I could never know which kids came from which family. They all lived in Tinwald House, you know. And then they ran it very successfully, and here, and I can well remember coming down, we had the bakehouse attached to our general store, and my dad, all in the hop picking season, we always had to have hot pies ready at 12 o'clock, you see. And the van had run them down here, and they'd all come and buy hot pie for threepence kind of thing. You know, it was their lunch kind of thing. They were there until after the war, and then, of course, there was what happened. I'm led to believe, and quite right, that this was the only property in the Derwent Valley that wasn't indentured in some way to Jones & Co. following the Depression, you know, and they all owed Jones & Co. money somewhere along the line, but the Plunkett family didn't. That was okay until I think about 1947 or later on. Anyway, after a while, there was a glut of hops, and that was their downfall, because they didn't owe Jones & Co. money, so they wouldn't take their hops, you see. So they naturally took the hops from the people who owed the money, but Plunketts didn't owe the money, so eventually that led to their demise. And then it came on the market, and Clyde Fitzgerald, who was, you know, a good businessman, but Clyde didn't worry about what money was owed kind of thing, so he just went along one day and bought it for the council kind of thing, and that caused a lot of strife, because they had committed to developing Kensington Park at that time, you know, as the sports area for New Norfolk. And then, of course, this was a much better situation kind of thing, you know. And so the council owned it. They grew very good hops along here kind of thing, and plenty of water.
Perhaps continuing on with the Terry situation, we advanced to about 1837. There were three young women in the district murdered, which created quite a stir. Now, the coach driver's wife, Mary Mills, was dropped off at the gate here to have a walk when her husband was taking the stagecoach to Hobart, and she was found that evening. She didn't arrive home when she should have done. She was found just out there towards the road. The long and the short of it, there was another woman at Sorrel Creek, named Doran, a young married mother, also found dead. And there was a lady at Rose Garland named Jessie Ives. She went missing, disappeared, all at the same time. There was a guy, a convict, was working for the Jarvises further down the road. He was into Terry's mill collecting flour with an oxen team, and he was seen by various people leaving the area. He was eventually hung for the crime, and suspected of being the murderer of the three women. A few interesting things out of this. The first guy that was picked up by the police and put in the slammer was Ikey Solomon, Fagin of Charles Dickens' novel Oliver Twist. He was found to be not responsible and let go, of course. The wash-up of the trial, which was rather significant, exposed the jealousy and the behaviour of the legal system in Hobart. When there was an inquest held in New Norfolk, brilliantly controlled and done, this guy that was seen with the oxen was picked up and put in the jail. Stephen, who was the Solicitor General or Attorney General in Hobart at the time, said, let him go, it's got nothing to do, the inquest's to find out how the woman died, not who committed the crime. So this went on, this created a bit of a furor. When I was researching this, the three murders of the lady at Rose Garland, Jessie Ives, 18 months after she'd disappeared, her body was found. And the guy she'd been living with was eventually charged with manslaughter for her death. So it had nothing to do with Gillam, who was the guy that murdered the stagecoach driver's wife. But what was interesting, reading all the trial detail, the guy that was charged with the manslaughter was in fact on site here at the same time as Mary Mills was murdered. The guy they hung, there's a question mark over whether he in fact did the crime or not.
The Walking Through Time project has been made possible through the assistance of the Australian Government's Your Community Heritage Program and funding from the Derwent Valley Council. We would like to thank the many members of the public who have given freely of their thoughts and memories to make this project a success.